Good morning. This is Valentina on Virtual Africa Creative Disturbance in Vancouver. I have the pleasure to be with Henry Daniel, who is a dancer and professor. Mm-hmm. So, good morning, Henry.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
My pleasure too. Can you please introduce yourself and tell me what you're doing?
Okay. I'm a professor of dance and performance studies here at Simon Fraser University in the School for the Contemporary Arts. Mm-hmm. I am born in Trinidad in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. My dance training, I began my career as an actor and a dancer in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. With two companies, one of them was the Trinidad Theatre Workshop under the direction of a very well-known man, mm-hmm. Derek Walcott, who mm-hmm. I believe subsequently got the Nobel Prize for Poetry in 1989, I think.
Wow, okay.
And I worked with a dance company there called the Trinidad Repertory Dance Theatre. Mm-hmm. And the kind of work we did was a mixture of contemporary dance and Afro-Caribbean dance. So that's my background before coming to study in the U.S.
Yeah, you travel quite extensively between U.S. and Europe.
Yes. So a lot of my formal training came in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And my professional dance experience, I spent 8 years in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Well, 9 altogether, 8 in New York and 1 okay. in Boston. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Germany. I became very much interested in what was going on there at my period in New York. And I actually ended up spending a decade in Germany working in Munich, Freiburg, in Breisgau, and Münster.
Have you ever been to Africa?
No, this is interestingly, I have never been to Africa. The closest I've been is to the Lanzarote Islands, the Spanish islands. But I have a brother mm-hmm. who lives in the Gambias.
Oh, okay. But I guess
very ironic.
Coming from Trinidad and yes. Tobago, you have some connection with Africa.
Yes, in the sense of a cultural legacy from West Africa. And that's in the form of course, I would say primarily in the influence of the West African, I guess primarily Nigerian, the Orisha tradition.
Yes.
So just like a lot of places like Brazil, mm-hmm. New Orleans, Cuba, Haiti, mm-hmm. we have a lot of that influence. Mm-hmm. So the typical deity, Shango, Ogun, mm-hmm. Yemanja,
yeah.
We have these festivals in the Caribbean and we have a lot of our arts circled around them.
Okay. So I was interested in meeting you because I attended, a presentation yesterday dealing with motion capture and mm-hmm. dance. And the presenter showed us some shadows, character appearing in by mistake into motion capture software, and your question was about this notion of ephemerality mm-hmm. in dance. So can you please contextualize it again and tell us more about mm-hmm. This notion of ephemerality in dance and how you define it in the field of digital performance and in particular dance? Yes.
Okay, so a lot of my research concerns itself with notions of memory.
Yes.
Cultural memory, memory embedded in the body, I would say perhaps at the genetic level, mm-hmm. a level of experience. In terms of digital technology, I was also very much interested in how this notion of memory has a particular frame, memory in the computer, how much memory do you have to run mm-hmm. a program, how does that system retain or keep whatever memory you store there. Mm-hmm. And I was also very much interested in the notion of ancestral memory that comes from, we've inherited from our West African religious mm-hmm. tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So this notion of memory also has to do with a kind of ontological framing,
mm-hmm.
In order to make sense. For example, in what I would consider to be a kind of West African framing of a notion of existence,
mm-hmm.
you have the world of the living,
mm-hmm.
which is directly connected to the world of the ancestors,
mm-hmm.
and the world of the unborn.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's in the middle between those?
Or? Yeah, so I guess the world of the living would be us.
Well, yeah, that I understand, but yes, which one is the primary one?
I guess the primary one in terms of how we see reality would be the world of the living.
Okay.
But a lot of the art, a lot of the theater deals with accessing those other sources,
okay.
the world of the ancestors.
And the unborn.
And the world of the unborn as potential.
Okay.
And of course, as you know, in the pantheon of Orisha mm-hmm. deities,
mm-hmm.
the particular figures mm-hmm. that feature very prominently in the way this whole ontology is constructed.
Yes.
So in terms of memory, I guess I very early in my life made some connections between the notion of computational memory, the notion of cultural memory, ancestral memory, and also the way these are framed within the context of how we see reality.
Yes.
So in technology, you have the virtual reality
yeah.
as a construction within a kind of a computerized frame
mm-hmm.
or existing within some virtual network.
Yes.
And then you have the reality of here and now where things hit you and you fall down and mm-hmm, you get hurt mm-hmm, and all these kinds mm-hmm. of things. And I'm also interested in that cultural frame in the sense that a lot of that West African tradition positions us as having very close contact with these deities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in many of our rituals, you would see people fall into trances.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would see them literally transform in front of you. But you don't see what they're seeing.
Yes.
So you have a manifestation of someone is in a state somewhere else, but you see them manifesting here and now
yes.
in what their physical bodies are doing.
Yes.
And then, of course, I have your own personal memory in the sense of you have experiences that resonate with you
mm-hmm.
from as far back as you can remember.
Yeah.
Painful memories, joyful memories. But all these different notions of memory, I found that when in dance we talk of the ephemerality of dance,
mm-hmm.
meaning that when you move, it's yeah. gone.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Yes.
On one level, of course, that is true. But at another level in which different notions of memory can be positioned, I wanted to know how that particular researcher was looking at motion capture memory in that context.
Yes.
When he said that there were these files of motion capture memories that were phantoms.
Yes.
In that they were generated by a body that didn't exist.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
In the sense that they carried out their experiments in the motion capture studio and then they left. But somehow their noise, the energy remained in the room.
Yeah.
And this memory was able to manifest itself in movement of characters that were impossible for human bodies.
Yeah, exactly.
So I became very much interested in this aspect of memory as a kind of a residue, an energetic residue, noise,
yes.
detritus that remained in the room after whatever experiment had taken place.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess philosophically I saw a relationship between ephemerality in the sense of what exists as a hard here and now,
yeah.
The notion of something disappearing,
mm-hmm.
how long does it take that energy to disappear, how long does it remain,
mm-hmm.
And degrees of ephemerality in the sense that, okay, you make a movement and the movement is gone. But what generates that movement? Is it a particularly painful experience that mm-hmm. can last a lifetime?
Mm-hmm.
Is it an aesthetic movement in a compositional nature that you make every day that doesn't mean a whole lot in the sense of maybe learning a dance technique that you will later transform into choreography?
Yes.
Is how deeply embedded in the individual are those movements, and how do these movements affect someone who's looking or viewing it? Maybe that resonates with a very joyful, a very painful experience that they've had before.
So how do you know that in the field of theater and probably in dance, mm-hmm. we move from the psychological paradigm. Mm-hmm. I mean, we move away from this. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how memory is different from psychology. I mean, mm-hmm. you're not afraid to fall down, to falling down again mm-hmm. into mm-hmm. this kind of psychological reading mm-hmm. of theatrical or yes. dance production, mm-hmm. like coming back basically like two or three century back mm-hmm. ago and starting to analyze again.
Okay.
The production has some psychological
manifestation. This is a good question because this is where my interest in another form of, perhaps we can call it memory mm-hmm. or maps. I'm very interested in what I think in many ways has replaced the psychological paradigm.
Yeah.
And that has to do with a number of research exercises done in the field of neuroscience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, especially in that area, in what researchers are doing in neuroscience, it's putting perhaps less stress on the psychological paradigm
mm-hmm.
and looking at particular kinds of patterns and structures, cortical maps.
Mm-hmm.
What are these patterns that mm-hmm. are engendered
mm-hmm.
in our experiences? What's the relationship between affect, emotion, and a set of patterns
mm-hmm.
Or a set of structures?
Mm-hmm.
How are experiences embedded in particular kinds of structures? And how do these structural maps continue, perhaps even in abstract ways, to influence us? So instead of having to rely always on a kind of psychological paradigm,
yeah.
how can we look at, I guess, for want of a better word at this particular point, and also because of my current research,
mm-hmm.
I'm looking at them as patterns within complex systems.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is, again, where the whole ontology of technology and computers comes into play. We tend to look at things as complex systems, network systems that have different kinds of effects on different people in different environments, and also the tight relationship between our actions, the space in which we act or react by the environment,
yeah.
and perhaps even larger notions of what this environment is. And again, I come back to that particular aspect of West African culture,
yeah.
where the quote-unquote environment that the traditional actor would think of would be the world of the unborn,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the world of the ancestor,
mm-hmm.
and the world of the living.
Yes.
But these are structures that do not necessarily carry the same amount of psychological weight
mm-hmm.
if you look at it from another point of view.
Okay.
In the sense that these are just worlds of different, maybe even materialist consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they're worlds that have different kind of energetic configurations.
Yes.
So I like to think of it as moving through a number of different systems, a cultural system that a part of me still has a connection to
mm-hmm.
A framing of that cultural system in a more scientific way
yeah.
in terms of complex systems that operate. And then my own personal auto-ethnographic
mm-hmm.
background that knows what connects emotionally, but also is able to see from a more abstract kind of perspective. So I guess to answer your question, that I feel perhaps is able to pull me away from a strictly psychological reading of what I'm currently involved in.
And how African dance contribute to your research?
Okay.
Because before starting recording, you told me that you live quite long. I mean, you basically live in North Europe and North America.
Yes.
That's where you spend most of your life. And
yes.
I guess that your training in dance also reflects that.
Yes.
You were talking about ballet and Leber notation and stuff. So do you have any African training in dance? And,
yes.
Or how do you get inspired by it?
Okay, now this is a very, very good question, because I may have mentioned earlier on to maybe not you, but to some other people I was speaking to earlier today. One of the things that quite baffled me when I was growing up in the Caribbean environment was we would be doing these Afro-Caribbean dance sequences. And every once in a while, I would see some of my fellow dancers fall into this trance state. We say become possessed.
Yes.
And this is something that you will find, for example, very often in the Brazilian candomblé or the Haitian voodoo, whatever it is, that it's, for some people, it's quite easy to make a transference into some altered state of mind that they would be in two realities simultaneously. And this baffled me because I was never even able to approach anything near to that. So I always wondered, is it a belief system that wasn't strong enough in me? Is it a kind of Western logic that was already embedded in me that, in a sense, forbade me to exit that mental kind of a frame. So this perplexing state of here is this experience that I can't experience, but I'm dancing the same dance. I think dancing the same dance.
Yes.
And then having a Western training in ballet and contemporary dance, and somehow also finding an ability to immerse myself in it. As I immerse myself in the Afro-Caribbean dance, but still not attain a sense of some kind of a trance state.
Yeah.
I felt somehow that maybe I wasn't able to achieve a true state of transformation. And what does one need to? So here am I talking about presence, ephemerality, transformation, maybe from an academic perspective. And here is an experience that in many ways I am unable to attain in terms of having this revelatory experience. Not in the art form, but I can't explain it here, but I've had several experiences in my life that I was able to do that, but through accident.
Okay.
So it's almost like some kind of abrupt shift that doesn't come from me, that put me into these states, that made me know that these states are possible. But I was never able to attain that through a practice. So this, I guess this is the best way that I can explain, in the sense of there is a state that can be attained. That state sometimes could be explained scientifically, and it can be attained through a practice. And I'm trying to find a way to do that through a knowledge of a physical practice, simultaneously knowledge scientifically of what is possible in certain kinds of states, and trying to find a way to achieve that through certain kinds of practices. I mean, I can give you a very simple example. I read a paper recently where they were looking at a patient under a neurological study. And they were, this person had an accident, and they were actually stimulating the certain aspects of her cortex. And this woman reported that she had out-of-body experiences. So that's an example of someone who, because of a certain manipulation certain cortical regions actually could have an out-of-body experience.
Okay, I'm sorry because we have to speed up a little bit. I guess my last question will be, what are the connections between this kind of trends experience and technologies?
Okay, I think what technology is increasingly reminding us of at a certain level is that there are different kinds of ways of manipulating, creating, engendering, stimulating our notions of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And in the very same way that it was the discovery of quantum mechanics that generated the discovery of the transistor, or the creation of the transistor, yeah, which eventually became the microprocessor,
mm-hmm,
we've been able to see how the behavior of electrons, unpredictable at a certain level,
mm-hmm,
we see that there is a similarity in our awareness as human beings. So I think a combination of approaching technology at a tool level, but also at a much more sophisticated level in terms of the behavior of electrons within certain kinds of environments,
mm-hmm,
which is what, you know, our technology is allowing us to explore. And the ability of the human being to have a particular kind of affective experience, that there is a close link between them, or maybe a link between them that we can examine more closely. So it is because of this that I'm also interested in body practices as a dancer,
mm-hmm,
in states of transformation, but also to examine this from a scientific perspective, and to do so with the tools of science, art, and technology.
Thank you very much, Henry. It was great to have you
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.